Shopify's already taken the cash register online, helping millions sell billions around the world. But did you know that Shopify can do the same thing at your retail store? Give your point of sale system a serious upgrade with Shopify. That's right, Shopify is the sound of selling everywhere. Online, in-store, on social media, and beyond. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. With Shopify POS, you can accept credit cards, mobile payments, and every other major payment method, all with low fees and transparent pricing, starting on day one. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/MLB podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/MLB podcast to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/MLB podcast.
This is the High Hopes Podcast. High Hopes. It's a bunch of baseball nerds talking about the Philadelphia Phillies on radio.com and sports radio 94 WIP.
Yo! It is another edition of the High Hopes Podcast. All right, let me just jump right in here. Before we go back and forth and do our banner, we have Scott Fransky coming up, and it's going to be awesome. I can promise you that. He's going to give us a lot of time, and it's super cool. But we have to address two things off the top before we get to something else that is incredibly important to address.
Okay.
Jack, let's address the two most important things off the top.
Yes.
You and I have both committed a heinous crime, heinous act,
wow.
And we both have to atone. Okay. I will start. I used the yo on another podcast, Goldbird's Pod. I'm hosting it for the first time. I used the yo. It was top five biggest mistakes I've ever made in my life.
Good.
It will never happen again. It felt awful in the moment. It popped out. Elliot goaded me into it. I'll blame him for it. It'll never happen again. I'm here to apologize. I'm here to off the top here to get to the most important thing. I am owning my mistake. It will never happen again.
Don't accept yet. You have a lot.
I have a lot of atoning to do.
Yeah. I mean, now I did just write it down because I wanted to make sure that we did bring it up. I wrote it down.
I got out. It's called getting out in front of it.
Yeah.
It's PR 101.
It's a good spin zone by you that I didn't grill you later on it. Very disappointing from you. You know,
it's a mistake. We all make mistakes.
I got you. I'm just saying that the yo. Listen,
holy, and that's what as it you can even and the funny thing, if you go listen to it, not that I'm recommending anyone should listen to anything but this podcast, even any podcast I'm on, but if you listen, you can even hear it as I do it, the hesitancy in my voice,
good.
And I know immediately, you know what I mean?
Good. That's what I like to hear. That's what the
never lie to the High Hopes listeners.
Never lie to the High Hopes listeners. And I appreciate you coming out and knocking this out head on. I think all the people out there appreciate it because, you know, frankly, we're all hurt.
I'm hurt. I'm hurt. Because I feel it too. That's where we're at.
Now, what did I do? What did I do?
Well, I mean, come on. You showed the world that you, I struggle to even verbalize the concept of putting mustard on a cheesesteak. What are we doing here, Jack? What is happening?
Here's what I don't get. You can put freaking mustard on a burger, but it's the same combination on a cheesesteak, and all of a sudden it's a heinous crime.
Yeah, it's pretty bad, man.
It's not bad, dude.
I think Twitter told you how bad it was.
Dude, I got 500 replies and 230 quote tweets. Do you know how many quote tweets that is? It's a lot of quote tweets.
That's a ratio right there.
Dude, it was 500 replies. It was like, I mean, listen.
That actually is like a really, an unbelievable amount of, for those who remember, my most replies ever was over 1,000 on that Pete Alonso tweet that everyone got super mad about.
Yeah.
500 replies on a cheesesteak. Like my tweet got 1,000 replies because it made it to like
Mets Twitter.
Barstool and all those people, you know, like PFT commenter and stuff. Like 500 on its own without that type of thing is actually unbelievable.
Yeah, and let me go inside baseball here. It means I won. I mean, thanks. I mean, I appreciate
it. It's all you ever wanted.
Yeah, I mean,
it's not your pinned tweet.
I did. Listen, you don't think I knew what I was doing? I mean, I saw the mustard. I saw the cheesesteak and I said, it's time to let the world know that I like mustard on my cheesesteaks. And it was delicious, like it always was.
Oh, God. I struggle to look at you the same way, Jack.
Whatever. Wait till we get to my Pavetta takes.
Speaking of which, just to put a bow on this, mustard is never okay on a cheesesteak.
Okay.
There are some things that are holy.
Sure.
Cheesesteak is holy. All right. Let's talk about now that we've got the less important stuff out of the way. Let's talk about the important stuff.
Yes.
So we were actually, let's go inside baseball again. We were supposed to record yesterday afternoon and something came up and we couldn't. And I get a text at like 7:30 at night or 8 o'clock at night, all caps. You're so lucky we didn't record.
Yes.
Fired up, Jeff.
Yes. Now, let me start off this with a little bit of coming forth, because we never lie to the High Hopes listeners. It's you know, put that on my tombstone. We never lie to the High Hopes listeners.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was fully prepared heading into yesterday's podcast to give up on Nick Pivetta and fully embrace Cutter Vinny, breakout Vinny.
I saw the tweets heading that direction. I saw a little like Vinny, am I in on Vinny action going on?
I know. And I was fully prepared to say I am. Wow.
Anyone who ever thinks that you would lie to the IOPS listeners, this now is proof that you would never lie, because this is a horrible thing for you to admit.
I know. I was sitting there on Tuesday night, and I said in my head, I think I love Vince Velasquez. And imagine ever uttering that sentence in the history.
Like you're broken.
Yeah.
I'm worried someone broke Jack.
I mean, besides the Padres start in 2016, like imagine ever uttering that sentence about a Vince Velasquez start. So listen, I was fully prepared to go all in, and I guess Nick got the message, and he fired 4 no-hit innings yesterday. I mean, we'll get to the walks. The walks did happen, but Edwin Jackson threw a no-hitter with like 1,000 walks. So if he can do it, then why can't Nick?
That's a great point.
So, well, I mean,
also to your point right there, though, I mean, if you're Nick Pivetta and your one and only fan is starting to turn on you, I mean, that should be a message.
Yeah. Well, I was just disappointed. I wasn't mad. I was just disappointed. You know, I saw Vinny like debuting a changeup that he could throw for strikes. I saw him throwing a cutter. And I saw him locating a breaking ball that actually has some bite to it to go along with the fastball. And I was like, come on, Nick. Like, are you kidding me? You know, Vince can do this. Why can't you? Honestly, like, listen, if they're both going to break out in the same season, I'll take it. I don't think it was a unbelievable like Pivetta performance. Like the red start was unbelievable. What yesterday was nice. It was good. I think it helped that he had JT behind the dish. You know, I think it gave him a little bit of extra confidence. And honestly, like the fastball control still not there. The shortened arm thing, I think, is going to eventually help him with, obviously it's already helped with the changeup. Like the changeup actually looks like a pitch that he can use. And he got, I think, 6 swings and misses on it from a Nick Pivetta changeup, which I didn't know that was possible. Yeah, I didn't know it was possible at all. So that was massive. The fastball location, I think with the shortened arm slot, he's not used to finishing over his front leg and fully getting glove side. And I think it's a little bit of a timing issue. You could see him kind of working through it on the mound. But if he can work to get glove side with that fastball coupled with the changeup and the already nasty curveball, and I actually saw a pretty good slider last night from which was surprising. Like, again, this is why I was screaming for him to learn a changeup forever, is because if you're going to have dog bleep fastball location, like at least if you have a changeup or something else to go off of that,
they don't know what's coming.
Right. They can't just tee up on your fastball. Like his fastball gets lit up. He throws 96 with rise, and it still gets teed up because they know it's coming because he has nothing else to throw. So it was a good start. It was a positive direction, moving in the right direction. The changeup was really good. The fact that he has that now, he threw it in 2-0 counts. He threw it behind hitters. He was pitching a little bit backwards. Like, that's massive. And, you know, it's not the worst thing in the world, especially in a shortened season with, you know, there could be guys going out with COVID and whatnot, to have six guys that can start a ball game for you. So
big time.
You know, 1 week from opening day.
And especially with guys not like likely not being able to go deep into games for the first couple weeks of the season. I mean, starters are just not going to be able to go seven. Well, we will see more 4 or 5 inning starts than 8, 9 inning starts, 7, 8 inning starts, I think, you know. Real quick, and we're going to get Scott Fransky in just a second. I want to get more a little bit later after Scott. We'll get into some more intra-squad stuff we've seen. Bryce Harper talking again. We'll get with other stuff to get and get into more specifically what you saw with Velasquez too. Mm-hmm. But just quickly before we get to Scott, it hasn't been a long time, but how much of what we're, and again, this is intra-squad games, you know, that all caveat we always give and all that. But
yeah.
Do you think Brian Price is making a difference already?
Well, I think the one thing Brian Price wanted these guys to all learn was a changeup. So the fact that the fact that both Vinny and Pivetta have both learned a changeup, I think is big. So I think that was part of his emphasis. Arrieta last night again. You know, I don't know why. It seems like they were kind of trying to get him to work up on the zone, and having Jake Arrieta work up in the zone with
makes
his
zero sense.
It just doesn't make any sense. Yeah. But last night he was down, you know, his changeups down, two seams down. Like everything was down, down, down. So it seems like they're getting back to that. But yeah, you know, I don't know if he's changed so much mechanically wise, but definitely getting these guys in the right mindset. Like I mean, you would think that they would have learned by now that you need a good semblance of a changeup to make it in the major leagues. And I guess it took a veteran pitching coach.
Like a real pitching coach? Wow.
Yeah. Who'd have thunk? Who'd have thunk?
Who'd have thunk a major league pitching coach could make a difference with a pitcher?
It's
I know.
Not just.
Okay, with a young pitcher. What? I know it's a crazy thought.
You're saying it's not just fastballs up and curveballs down that can that can work. So yeah, I think from that standpoint, you know, having a guy and plus these guys, if you just talk to them or hear them talk about Brian Price, they just trust him. You know, I don't know if there was ever a level of trust with Chris Young.
Well, there wasn't. I mean, I think we have heard enough, whether it's Aaron Nola or Arrieta or whoever, we've heard enough guys come out and bash Young publicly to the point where I think it was very clear that there was no level of trust between him and his pitchers.
No. So I think Brian Price going to those guys and saying, hey, you need a change up, just carries a little bit more weight than when Chris Young does it.
This is good. This is exciting, Jack. I'm excited. All right,
for as excited as we are about Girardi, it's not even just Girardi.
Like, it's the staff.
Yeah,
I agree.
The staff is great. Like it's a legitimate baseball staff.
Yeah. No, I agree. Price, Dylan. I mean, Thompson with Girardi. I think those two work really well together. We've seen that in the past. So, I'm so with you. All right, we're gonna get to Jack's thoughts on Velasquez. I want to talk about what we saw from Spencer Howard. What Bryce Howard had to say about Spencer Howard.
Bryce Harper.
And a whole lot more of a whole lot more from the intra-squad stuff. But now, let me welcome in. It is our distinct pleasure to talk to the one and only Mr. Scott Fransky. And it is our pleasure to welcome in the one, the only, the voice of the Philadelphia Phillies. And a voice I know that I'm speaking for everyone when I say we cannot wait to have him back in our lives. The one, the only, Mr. Scott Fransky. Scott, thanks for joining us, man.
Hey, thanks. Good to be here.
Scott, I think the main question that everyone around the city is asking, you know, you've had 100 games off. Has Scott Fransky lost his fastball?
Probably. My timing will likely be way off. I didn't get a summer camp. You know, we don't have any exhibition games to work into it. So
yeah, I mean, you got a nice 2 games of exhibition baseball. I think you should be good to go for next Friday.
We thought we would do some broadcaster inter-squad broadcasting this week, but it didn't materialize.
I guess LA really wasn't into the idea of broadcasting inter-squads.
He refused to play for the blue squad, so there was no way we could reconcile things.
Well, that's actually an interesting concept. You know, you think about players getting ready for the season. You know, you think about spring training and getting your reps in and all that, but you don't really think about broadcasters having to kind of build up to it. Is that a unique thing you're having to deal with this year without like a spring training to kind of get yourself ready for the season?
You know, it is in a small part. I mean, honestly, we did a lot of research on the players that were on the roster, obviously, in, you know, January, February, March, before things got shut down. So I think the biggest thing for us is going to be an adjustment of, you know, just how we do our jobs, not only I know a lot of has been made about the, you know, the technical part of it and not being on site for road games and things like that. But I think beyond that, it's the time you spend, you know, face to face with players, coaches, manager, that sort of thing, where we won't have that access this year. So I think, you know, when you think about, oh, day to day, I wanted to clarify something that happened in the game last night, for instance. You know, we could just find somebody at the cage or find somebody at their locker next day and maybe get a clarification on a play or a scenario or whatever. That won't be as easy to pull off for us this year. So I think that is going to be the biggest adjustment for us.
Yeah, that's a fascinating thought. I hadn't thought about that, how much that adds to the context of the broadcast. Obviously, I think another clearly unique thing with this season, and one of the things that from a fan perspective, I think is going to be so unique. And obviously for you, what are you anticipating with the challenges, the differences and all that with calling a game in an empty stadium? It's unique.
I have no idea what to expect. I can be honest with you.
Good answer. Right.
I mean, I don't know. I haven't done. I mean, I think back to when I did minor league baseball, and there were days when certainly, we were in, you know, you'd have very small crowds. And literally in, you know, low A ball, you know, some of the smaller towns, I mean, when I say small crowds, I mean, you could definitely have places where there were 100 people, you know, or less at a game, you know, on a random Tuesday night in the middle of July or whatever the case might have been. So I think back to those days, and, you know, I remember having to try to get up for that and you know, make it sound important and everything else. So I hope we can all pull that off. I think we talk so much about it because it's unknown, and how will this be and what – we don't really know. We won't know until we get into it. And I can imagine it's going to be weird. I can imagine it's going to be – tough to sort of, I don't know, ride. I mean, you're riding your own emotions, plain and simple. And you're not riding the emotion of the crowd because there is none. So, you know, and then the canned crowd noise and all the things that the different parks are playing. I don't know. I guess we'll just have to find out.
Yeah.
It's a terrible answer for the purposes of this podcast, but it's all I've got.
And look, I also think it just shows the uniqueness of all this, how unique it is for everybody, even the guys calling the game, even the people around the team all the time. Like, this is going to be different for every single person, from the people playing it to the people calling it to the people watching it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's no doubt. It's different for everybody. It's different up and down the list. So, you know, come July 24th, we'll get started and you know, hopefully, knock on wood, we'll get through the 60 games uninterrupted and see what happens for the playoffs. So, you know, hopefully everything goes okay. I know there's going to be challenges, there's going to be hiccups, there's going to be, you know, you're already hearing, you know, different things about what stadiums you can and can't play in, and people are coming up with all these backup plans. So I think it's going to require everybody to be a little bit flexible.
What are you kind of expecting from a 60 game season? Do you think it's going to feel like every game, like, kind of matters more than it's just game 30 of a 162 game season?
I mean, again, I think we're in that gray area of we haven't done it before, but I have to believe that it's when you really think about the numbers. And, you know, we're baseball people and we're conditioned for the long marathon and the 162 games. And we're conditioned for the fact that, you know, 60 games barely gets you into June. And, you know, what's that? You know, that's barely starting the season in a lot of respects. So I think as we get into it now, again, you're going to go the first week and it's all the whole feeling out process of, travel's different, stadiums are different, no crowds, you know, how do you find emotion, how do you find energy to get going, is everybody testing negative every day, are there cases, or, you know, what's happening around as far as the virus goes. And then all of a sudden you look up and you, I don't know, let's say 10 days, 2 weeks into the season. Well, that's close to 15 games. Well, that's close to a quarter of your season. You know what I mean? So it
yeah.
goes by. It's
you could, you
by
could be
really
essentially in some ways out of it 2 weeks into the season for all intents and purposes. You know, if you have a really bad start.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, I just think for so many of us that, you know, again, that's the way our brains look at it. That's the way our cliches have spoken about it for years
totally.
And years.
We don't even look at this schedule till like June 1st, like till 60 games
right.
in. You know, I mean, the standings. You don't really pay attention till then.
Right. And now you're going to be, I think, more sort of hyper-focused on it. And maybe that's, you know, in part, that's going to be a media thing. Maybe players will take it kind of the same way. But I definitely think that if teams don't get off to good starts, now, again, I guess it's kind of like the old adage. You're not going to win it in April. You could lose it in April, though. Same thing applies. You're not going to win it in the first 2 weeks, but maybe you could very well lose it. So I think for the team that comes out and for the teams that come out and don't, you know, sort of step on the gas pedal right away, they, you know, you, it doesn't take long to look up 3 weeks in and find yourself a little bit buried. So I, you know, again, I think that's, I hope that means, you know, everything would be more exciting and the like you said, Jack, the sort of the emphasis on every game would be more important. I think that's what, you know, baseball itself is hoping for. I mean, could you imagine that 60 game sprint with fans in the stands? I mean,
yeah,
oh,
it would be
man.
Amazing. I mean, right? We might break out the rally towels 30 games in.
Especially our, I mean, our town would be crazy. If you're 30 games in, you're in a pennant race, you're halfway through the season. Yeah, I mean, but we'll see. I, you know, that whole piece without the fans, it's just going to be weird to see how it feels and how it looks.
Yeah, I almost feel like it can't have the same level of intensity unless there's fans in the building. Like the fake crowd noise, you know, it's they're playing around with it and they're getting a little bit better with it, but it's still weird. It's like a weird kind of rise in the crowd, and then it's like quiet at some points, and some points it's just like, I don't know. It's just gonna be weird.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, think about a player's reaction. Like, think about all the playing to the crowd that Bryce does. You know, during a game and hitting a big home run, and now to think he can't even go so far as high fiving his teammates,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
You know, players feed off that emotion of the crowd and that moment, and whether they say they do or they say they don't, I know that most of them do. It's human nature. And then the other part of that is that, they play for their teammates. That's great. They can't even sort of share the same kind of emotion with their teammates that they could in the past. So, you know, that's a different thing too. I don't know. I think the teams, the players themselves that are able to get fired up, get emotionally invested in it from the beginning, maybe stand the best chance of being successful.
Yeah. Now, obviously you were around the team like every day last year under Gabe. It's pretty much the same team. Obviously Didi's here, Wheeler's here, some bullpen additions, but it's pretty much the same team. You were around the team in spring training. What was kind of the feel around the team, and you know, what kind of impact do you think an addition like Joe Girardi can have on this team?
I think it's important. I mean, again, I think the players, you know, anytime you get a new manager, the players don't want to, they're not going to come out and, you know, say negative things. I mean, everything's always rosy and good and whatnot at the start. But I think the way you learn sometimes about how players feel about a manager is when things are going bad and how a manager reacts. And, you know, Joe Girardi has a certain track record and it's a good one. And, you know, again, I think you find out most about the character of the guys in your clubhouse in bad times. And, you know, that same goes for the manager, and the same goes for the coaches too. I mean, coaches that are flexible, coaches that are are willing to try different things, and coaches that have solutions and different kinds of solutions for different kinds of players. And I think the Phillies have feel like they've invested in just those kind of coaches, and say Joe Dillon and Brian Price and guys that can be creative and help players make adjustments along the way. And, you know, I know people have been excited about some of the things they've seen here with some of these inter-squad games when it comes to the pitchers. So I think the mood was good from what I could tell, certainly in February and March. And, you know, I see no reason why, you know, at this point, everybody's in pretty good spirits, just trying to get this thing going.
Yeah, I think you made a great point in there, Scott, the idea of the players and teams that are able to kind of compartmentalize and take the external, unbelievable, unique external factors that none of us have ever dealt with in a season and be able to compartmentalize that and go out and play baseball and focus on that. I think, you know, could maybe change, like, where maybe the most talented team doesn't win because this real talented team is able to focus in more or whatever. But with that in mind, and kind of knowing this group of guys and all that, what's your optimism level for this Phillies team on this, you know, strange, unique 60-game sprint?
Well, I mean, do I feel like they have the most talent on paper? No, I don't. In this division, and obviously with the, you know, the cross with the AL East, that's, you know, it's a really tough schedule.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
Yeah, it's tough.
It's tough. We could be real here. It's tough.
And again, I don't think the Phillies have the most talent on paper. Does that mean they can't win or make the playoffs? No, they can. They are talented enough. I think with any season, injuries play a huge role, and I think they're going to be really magnified this year because, again, as we talked about, you know, a guy goes on the DL for 2 weeks because of a hamstring. That's a quarter of the season, just about, you know. That's a fourth of the season. So it makes a huge difference if you lose, you know, Bryce Harper goes down with a groin pull or something like that. I mean, knock on wood, you're not talking about injuries like that very often. Because I think if you are, you just don't have time to recover from it. And I know there's going to be extra hands on deck and a chance to, you know, have some extra players at the start and things like that that might help overcome some of that. But if you lose a significant player along the way, you know, I mean, whatever, Jacob DeGrom goes in for an MRI, something's up with his back. They say he's going to start opening day. Well, you don't think that, I mean, you don't think, how many starts is he going to get in a season?
Yeah.
It's a great point. If he gets like 12 or 13 starts, if he misses two or three, I mean, that's a quarter of his starts potentially that he's missing because of this. It's a great point.
That's huge. And the same goes for any other starter. You know, Cole Hamels in Atlanta. It sounds like he won't be ready for the start of the season. So I just think, you know, the injuries may play a bigger part this year than they ever have. You know, I mean,
especially with the weird ramp up and ramp down, and we don't know if guys are in full shape. There's a lot of that.
Yeah, you know, and I'm talking about the relatively minor injuries that are going to be magnified this year, unlike ever before. I mean, Tommy John is one ACL tear, like McCutcheon or whatever. That's one thing. Season enders, that's, you know, but a season ender here could be, you know.
Could be an oblique injury. Oblique injury, you're done for the season practically. Like, that's crazy.
Absolutely. Do I think they have the most talent? No, not on paper. I don't. But does that mean they can't surprise a lot of people? Certainly doesn't mean that. They're capable of it. They've got a lot of talent in that room. That's for sure.
Now, I can't let you out of here without talking about the run from 07 to 11. And obviously you were on the call for pretty much all the big moments. In your opinion, what was the loudest moment at Citizens Bank Park during that run that you were on the call for?
Oh, gosh. You didn't tell me there'd be hard questions.
I know. That is a loaded question. I know. There was a lot of moments, a lot of big moments.
It's such a Jack question, too, Scott. Can we be serious? This is like the Jackiest Jack question ever.
Hey, I've listened to those calls 1,000 times, you know.
That's why.
I just needed to ask.
Yeah. Well, my loudest moment was obviously J-Roll's walk off.
Oh, buddy. We know. It's amazing.
Yeah.
LA. Both of you guys.
I still get chills every time I hear it. It doesn't matter how many times I hear it. I still
too.
Get chills.
It's one of my Pantheon calls. It is one of my favorite baseball calls of my lifetime.
One of my favorite memories. I'll just give you a couple of my favorite memories. And as far as it relates to the crowd and the park and the atmosphere, one of them, the last day of 07, before the game even started.
Yeah.
And Tom Glavine is getting it handed to him.
Oh, yeah.
New York,
Mets. That was
by
great.
The Marlins. And the Phillies played 30 minutes later. You know, their
first like six runs in the first he gave up or something, right? He just got pummeled.
Yeah, it's like six or seven, yeah. And the crowd, again, it's not full at this point, but they're filing in and they're watching it on the out-of-town scoreboard. And that's all. They're not watching the video. They're watching it on the out-of-town scoreboard. And then we're watching it in the booth, and people are gathered up along the walkway underneath our booths, and they're looking back up in and seeing it on TV. And, you know, it was sort of that
awesome.
It's going to happen today kind of thing. And
especially
then,
after the run, after the 7 with 17 back, like the culmination of it all,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Yeah. For me, I mean, the night they won the World Series, and I was not, on the call, obviously Harry was in the booth and I was went down on the field to do interviews and just standing on the field after that and seeing the reaction of the crowd, seeing the players' faces reacting to the crowd and reacting to the moment and realizing what it meant to the city, what it meant to those guys personally, individually, how much, the sense of relief after something like that, it was the first time I'd really seen that kind of thing up close, and on a personal level. I mean, you just think about the number of hours that these guys put into this pursuit, right? And to see it come to fruition and fulfilled, it was just a really cool moment to stand out there and, you know, see the crowd, see the jubilation in the stadium and to feel it and all that from the players. It was pretty cool.
And not many people get to have that experience of being field level for a team winning World Series in their hometown. I mean, that's unbelievably unique thing, you know?
Literally, I'm standing on the pitcher's mound.
It's unbelievable.
Because just the melee happened or whatever, and I had to grab somebody, and I grabbed Victorino at one point. I remember we were waiting. You know, I've got the earpiece in or headset on or whatever, and I'm waiting to hear Harry and Wheels send it down to the field to start the interview. And I'm just looking at Shane, and he's staring up into the crowd, and you know, with this half disbelief, half relief, half jubilation. I mean, like all these emotions are wrapped up in his eyes.
Wow.
In that moment, it was just a really cool thing to be let in on, you know, because it's really, I mean, it's a communal event. There's no doubt. And the crowd and everything that the city wants and, you know, has wanted for so long and they got to experience it. But it's also very personal for those players, the amount of time they put into it. And just seeing it from that angle was really, really cool.
That's just awesome, and I'm sure our listeners love hearing that because that was a special moment for all of us, too. Like, you talk about the players, but everything, and the fans, you know, wait a long time for that, too, and to hear that perspective is really cool. Scott, we cannot thank you enough for the amount of time you've given us today. Quickly, on the way out here, before we let you go, we like to sometimes have a little fun and do a quick rapid-fire few questions at the end with you, if you don't mind, a couple some on topic, some off, but just have a little fun at the end if you don't mind. I'll start it off with an easy one. What was your favorite thing that you watched during this quarantine period we were all in?
Favorite thing I watched? I got to be honest, I didn't watch very much. Right at the beginning, I watched Tiger King.
Oh, man.
As did we all.
What a disaster that show was.
Yeah, complete. But really interesting.
Entertaining. Really interesting. Come on, let's be real. It was super entertaining.
I'm going to be totally honest with you. I think I watched, other than that, I think I watched one other TV show.
Wow.
And I watched one episode of Ozark. I did a lot of reading, but I watched
good. Oh, you got any great good book recommendations? I'm a reader.
Book club?
Let's see. I read some new, I read some old. I did read Zalecki's Doc Halliday book.
That was
the only sports book I read.
So good.
Yeah, it was good. And I don't know. I'd have to go back through the list. I mean, I read a ton of stuff. I don't know that anything flew off the page at me, to be perfectly honest. But, you know, I got through most of them.
Well, what would you
the kids wear me out, though. The kids' TV shows are on all the time, and that's what wears me out.
Yeah, so. I'm sure. What is the worst thing about having to work with Kevin Franzen?
Too many to name. Is this just too hard to pick one?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to make it sound like there's a big list or anything. So again, Jack, with the leading questions. I mean,
you know, Jack. I mean, come on.
Listen, he's a friend of the podcast.
He's literally doing this just so he can clip the audio and send it to his buddy Kevin and say, ha 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 ha.
Scott married you.
The worst thing is trying to keep up with his energy level.
Yeah, I can see that.
What a diplomatic answer from Scott Fransky.
It's sometimes I can't, I'm going to need to like tie him down to the chair and just, it's like my kids sometimes. It's like, hey, I got work to do. Just be quiet. Okay.
This is what Jack has to do with me a lot of times.
And by the way, I don't know when you guys are floating this podcast up, but I'm going to get a text about how long have we been talking?
25 minutes.
Okay. I'm going to get a text about 27 minutes after this podcast airs from him. You can guarantee it.
I think that was the whole point of Jack asking the question.
I mean, I would have said his hands. I mean, the effort in Arizona last year was just very sad from a former Major League player.
Yeah. It killed him.
It did.
I mean, absolutely killed him.
All right, one more fun one from me, Scott. Who's the nicest player you've ever interacted with?
Nicest player?
Just one of the nicest. Yeah, it doesn't have to be.
Yeah, it might be a guy on the club right now, Zach Eflin.
He
might be one of the people. Don't get me wrong. We've had a lot of really good people. And there's a lot of them right now. I don't want to, you know, whatever. But we've all talked about Zach Eflin and just how polite and courteous and he's been since day one that he got to the big leagues, and he hasn't changed at all.
Well, that's good to hear. Are we going to get breakout Pivetta in 2020 or what?
I'm leaving that to you, pal.
I think it's a mistake. I don't think Jack should be anywhere near this.
The Nick Pivetta thing. Fan club.
It's Jack.
It's only
it's a one person club.
It's a one man crew, Scott. We are.
At this point, you're the flag bearer, man.
Yep.
You just keep riding it. You know.
Thanks.
Maybe
for the
this
may
year.
As well. They're pot committed, as they say.
Yeah. Exactly.
Thanks for the encouragement. I appreciate it. Do you think that LA is going to make it here for the start of the season, or are we looking maybe game 10?
Good question. I'm not sure. I know he's been in Florida the whole time.
Yeah. He is a Florida man.
And I know he had some stuff he had to do up here regardless if the season was going to start or not. So I do believe he's if not en route, maybe already in Philly.
Good to
I
hear.
Haven't talked to him in a few days. But yes, my prediction is that Larry will make it to the season. The jury's out on whether he will make it through the season.
Sounds about right.
Jack, do you have any more trouble you want to cause before we let Scott go?
No,
or are we good on that front?
No, I'll let him go.
Scott, seriously, thank you so much for the time you've given us. And you know, I'm sure we'll talk to you down the road as the season goes on. But you know, good luck with the unique circumstances this year. And I said it at the top, but I promise you, all of us in Phillies Nation literally cannot wait to hear your voice calling games again. So we're psyched, man.
Well, we're looking forward to getting the chance to call some. It's been a long time coming, hopefully we can all do this the right way and keep everybody safe and healthy while we do it, and maybe entertain some folks along the way, because I know we're all in need of a little entertainment, a little distraction from the way things have been, that's for sure. So thanks for having me, guys.
All right, thanks,
Scott. Truer words were never spoke. Thanks, Scott. Just the best, Jack. Scott's the best.
Ah, oh, I love Scott. Yeah, I mean,
he gave us like 30 minutes almost. Like, it's like he definitely has more important things to do than to talk to you and me. So
yes,
that was cool.
He does. And like, honestly, like, so I produced a lot of the games here, you know.
Yeah, a lot. Like, you've talked to him down the line, as they say, every night, a lot.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So it's always a pinch myself moment when it's like,
totally.
When it's like, I'm talking to Scott Francis.
Well, and I'm not even kidding. What I said to him is true. Like, that Jimmy Rollins call is like one of my favorite baseball calls of all time. And obviously, I'm a Phillies fan, so there's a slight bias there and stuff. But like, Scott's that good. You know, Scott is that talented that he is like an elite baseball play-by-play guy. Like, he's that good.
Oh, I mean, the Rollins call is unbelievable. I mean, I've heard,
and obviously LA's emotion and all
yeah.
that.
Well,
helps make it.
So. That's what makes them great. Is that they're like, yeah. What makes those two so good is that they're real. Like, they just feel like real dudes. They're funny. They're entertaining. And
yeah, having a beer and talking baseball. That's what it feels like.
Yeah, they legitimately care about the team and whatnot. And hope. That's what sucks about the no fans thing. Like, I just. You know, for his
We got into it a bit with him, but you could tell, like, especially with we talked about it for the players more so, but for the announcers, I mean, that's a, like, he kind of alluded to it, like, having to, like, his own emotions going to have to carry him. Like, it's clear that that's going to be an effect for announcers.
Yeah. Well, I mean, because think about it, it's basically a calling
crowd. Of course you do. It's a human thing. It's emotion. You're in a building with all these people and this emotion there. It's like it's a shared experience.
Well, and especially it's CBP. I've been to a couple other ballparks. You know, I think Wrigley has it, but there's like that different level of like electricity that you
totally.
Can like when the ballpark's going, you can kind of just feel it. Like you felt it last year at opening day, and that was really the first time you felt it. You know, since 2011, you know, it felt like so. Like CBP has that different level of electricity that you can just feel kind of walking throughout the ballpark, and we always talk about the CBP roar. You know, where it like slowly and then like explodes, like the Victorino double to lead off or in the first inning of game 5 in 2008, like there was a different level of crowd going with it. And you can just always tell that Scott's voice rises with the crowd. And
totally.
Like this year, if they hit a walk-off home run, it's going to be hard to make up the same energy. Like you can't be like, go on. Like you can try, but it's always going to fall a little bit flat because of the no fans in the
100%,
stands.
100%, man. 100%. I was just watching. I was very Fritzian of me.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, you know, when the intra-squad games end, like it kind of just puts you other baseball heads and stuff. And I was like, screw it. I'm just going to put on Phillies highlights. And I watched the Harper Grand Slam again. And it's like, that's a perfect example of that where like the emotion is all in the crowd, the moment, the rising with it, the, you know, like in the, how it goes up and up and up and up. And as it, and the intensity builds as, you know, the Cubs keep flubbing balls at second base and runners and the bases are loading and they're scoring runs. Like you can, it builds, there's an intensity, there's an energy there that I agree, Jack, is literally going to be impossible to recreate without fans in the stands.
Yeah. And it, like watching guys crumble, you know, under the pressure is always fun. And, you know, the crowd has a part in that.
Totally. Totally. And I do think, and I mentioned this with Scott too, but I do think that this year has a different kind of pressure or unique pressure where it's this constant kind of overarching thing over the whole season that these players have to deal with and compartmentalize, where I do think that I think teams that are able to deal with the circumstances of this season, the fear, the this, the that, there's so much stuff that I think teams that can compartmentalize and focus on what their task is maybe could exceed their talent, so to speak, in this particular individual unique year. But let's talk about a team that we hope is going to exceed what we expect from them. Let's get back to the Phils and kind of get into some more of the intra-squad stuff before we get out of here.
Yeah.
We heard a little bit about your Pivetta thoughts, but you know, the two other kind of big pitching performances we've been talking about, Velasquez, I want more of your thoughts on why it seems like you're starting to buy in on Vinny, which is a scary thought. And then obviously I want to talk about what you saw from Spencer Howard before we get to the whole other Spencer Howard thing. But start with Vinny. Where are you at on Vinny? What's making you – like? Because, again, look, we've all done this, right? We've all done the I'm in on Vinny again. I'm in on Vinny again. I'm never going to be in on Vinny again. Like, why is it – what's happening now that's kind of making you be like, okay?
It's – I mean, it's the cutter. It's literally the cutter. Like, I understand. I understand why people are going to balk at possibly being in on Vince Velasquez. And I'm not even like –
you're not like, look, you're not like all in. You're not like, this guy's going to be greater.
Right. Like, I'm just saying that there's a path to a useful pitcher right here. Like a 3.75 ERA guy. And you'll take that from Vince Velasquez this year.
Oh my God. Are you kidding me, Jack?
Yeah, definitely.
We would kill for that with Vince Velasquez.
But what we saw from him on what was it? Tuesday night? Monday night? I think it was Monday.
It was Tuesday night.
It was Monday night. Because Monday, Monday and then Tuesday I was there, and last night was Wednesday. Oh, no, last time was Thursday.
No, I'm right.
It was Tuesday.
You were there. Thank you.
It was Tuesday. I thought it was Thursday. we're doing a morning podcast, so what can you expect from me?
I know.
So, but like,
we don't get to do these because I'm never off work at this time, so it's beautiful.
Exactly. It's throwing off my whole rhythm.
I know.
But Velasquez, like the cutter being there is just massive. Because again, the same exact thing with Pivetta. It's that guys can't sit there and tee off on his other stuff minus his fastball. Like, Vinny's fastball is a elite fastball. Like, just looking at the numbers behind it, like, hitters have a hard time consistently squaring up his fastball. His other stuff sucks. Like, it always gets hit. Like, slider, curveball. Never really threw a changeup, but this year seems like he's starting to throw that more. But having the cutter to pair with a fastball and just being able to overpower guys – and, you know, just when they think they're starting to get timing down on the fastball, the fact that he can drop in that cutter and give them a different look is just making him harder to consistently square up. And getting the ball off the barrel is the most important thing with pitching. Getting the ball to where, hey, I'm going to square this up, and then last second ducks and a guy can't consistently square it up. And you saw him fool hitters, which I didn't know it was possible from Vinny. Like, he fooled JT Realmuto. Like,
he did. Like, yeah, he did.
And the part that was so impressive in the Realmuto at bat is he drops a 2-0 curveball in there.
Yeah, it was like sequencing and stuff.
It was a 2-0 curveball, started high, ended low, like most curveballs. And then just how important this growth is, he started a curveball. He definitely wanted it more outside, like whatever. He missed a spot, which is fine. But he started in the same spot he started his curveball, but it rose and Realmuto couldn't consistently catch up to it. And then he dropped a cutter in there, which he wasn't expecting, and then he finally got him to ground into a weak double play on a changeup. Like, he kept JT Realmuto off balance. He struck out Bryce Harper. Like, these guys are well, Bryce isn't he strikes out a good amount. But
yeah, but still, I mean, they're still elite major league hitters.
Yeah, and he made Kingery look foolish on a changeup, which again, didn't know was possible. So, like, I think there's reason to believe in Vince Velasquez. I understand there's reservations about him, but there is reasons to believe because of that cutter. And he didn't have that in spring training. He learned that in the last 3 months, and he's already throwing it for strikes, and it has pretty good spin. It's not super tight, but it's tight enough. And I just think that's massive.
Look, it could get better if this is something he's working on, right? Theoretically,
he's athletic enough, and he had a good pace to him. He didn't let things, like, usually if he walks a guy, like the Realmuto at bat, I keep going back to, but whatever. He walked Bryce on 4 pitches, I think. He fell behind JT Realmuto 2-0, then came back with a curveball. Like, when has Vince Velasquez ever shown that? So it seems like he's taking a big mental step forward. I thought Pivetta took a nice mental step forward. And listen, if you can get those guys rolling, I mean, those guys have talent to be decent, pretty good major league pitchers.
I mean, we've seen it.
Yeah.
I mean, 2 years ago, Nick Pivetta had some stretches and certainly individual starts where he was dominant. Like, actually, and we've seen Velasquez go on, you know, 8 to 10 start stretches where he is a capable major league pitcher. And look, to be, if we, you know, if you want to look at a glass half full, Brian Price is far and away, without question, the best, most accomplished major league pitching coach that these guys have ever worked with. Period. And a story. I mean, I like Rick Kranitz. I think he's fine. But like, Brian Price is a very accomplished major league pitching coach. So, and if there is, as we are discussing, some sort of talent in these guys that they have shown at a major league level, like, it would it be the craziest thing ever if Brian Price were to be able to pull more out of these guys than other guys were? No, I don't think it's the craziest thing ever. I'm not expecting it, but like, it's not crazy.
No, it's not at all. And that's the thing that kind of sucks about, you know, where baseball is kind of trending, is it's getting away from real teachers, you know, teachers of the sport. And, you know,
getting more towards numbers and launch and this, yeah, and that. It's less so about like teaching the fundamentals of baseball.
Exactly, exactly. And I think that there, what I like about where the Phillies are at right now is that they have Girardi, they have Price, they have Dylan. Dylan's a little bit in the...
Yeah, he's less accomplished than those Girardi and Price, just on resume-wise.
Right, but he's also more into the advanced analytics stuff and all that. So, like, but he's also a good teacher of hitting from everyone we've read. But
from what we understand, yeah. Yes. The Washington guys raved about him.
Exactly. So what I like where the Phillies are at is that they have the major league guys who are good teachers of the sport. And then they also have all the driveline guys. I mean, you know how we feel about Ochard, but it's not even just Ochard. Like, they have a ton of driveline pitching guys, which I think is only going to help help get the most out of the guys coming up through the minor league system. So they're doing it both ways. In the development side, they have the driveline guys, they have the advanced technology and that kind of stuff, that where the game is progressing, right? They have the right guys in their minor leagues to do that. But on the major league level, they have a teacher in Brian Price, gets where it's coming from, has been seasoned, you know, change-ups, mechanics, still working on the important stuff. But with what the minor leaguers have in the development staff that the Phillies have, I just think is massive. And I think it's the perfect mix of what you're looking for a major league baseball team.
All right, let's talk about the pitcher who, you know, I think we has the widest variance for us this year in terms of we don't know if and when he's going to play and theoretically just how great it can be. But it was pretty awesome to actually get to watch Spencer Howard step on the mound at Citizens Bank Park and throw some pitches,
yep,
even if it was to the Phillies. What'd you take away from what you saw from him?
He's got to get rid of the number 83. It's just
I think that's pretty clear.
I mean, for like
him and 83 and Bowman 80, it's like no.
Let's stop joking around here. Let's give Spencer Howard like 33. I think he looked good in the 30s. So Howard obviously comes out and it was disgusting. Just overpowering guys, you know, just blew a fastball right by
eye test. It's like eye test
stuff.
Yeah. You know, just see some of this stuff and you're like, oh, that guy has it.
And
I love
the way he finishes. You know, he gets a lot out of his stuff. He explodes towards the plate how I want Pivetta to get to. Like, Pivetta just kind of cuts himself off and still has good stuff, but like, Howard is another level of stuff. Like, Howard is power, 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 and then he can throw the changeup whenever he wants. Like, the changeup is such a difference maker, and the fact that he already has a feel for it. And like, Pivetta and Velasquez are just kind of learning the changeup, and they don't really have. Like, he doesn't move. You know, it's just kind of a change of pace pitch for them at this point. But Spencer Howard is like legitimately a good pitch, and he has good feel for it. The slider, I think, is okay. Curveball, like, eventually Howard's going to get to a point where he's going to throw like a 75-mile-an-hour curveball for like an 0-1 strike or a 2-0 strike, and then just get guys out with the slider. And then the fastball. I mean, the fastball is power, power, power. And honestly, he reminds me a lot of a taller Walker Buehler.
Wow. And that's a strong comp, my friend.
He looks like a taller Walker Buehler. They have similar stuff.
Love.
I don't know about you. I was already envisioning a playoff start last night. Just like with I was just thinking about like what it would look like.
If he wants to be playoff Buehler, let's freaking go.
Yeah. So like he's just such a difference maker, man. Like they're a year away. They're a year away from I think Nola could be the two. I think Nola could be the two, and Spencer Howard could.
He's the ceiling is that high.
Yeah, I mean Howard
that quickly.
Howard Buehler and Nola is a good three to go into any.
Yeah, I mean I agree with you. I mean you look at the best three, like take out the Nationals because obviously that's unique and just clearly the best three. But after that, I mean like. If Howard is who we think he is, like I'd put Nola, Buehler, and Howard up against, like maybe that, you know, look, none of those guys is Jack Flaherty, but you know, I think if you take the totality of the top three with Miles Mikolas, whoever's in there, like I think you could put that Phillies three up against any three in the National League, really. I mean, Buehler, Kershaw, whoever you want to choose the third, there's probably slightly better now, but like the point is, it's like comparable. If Spencer Howard is what we think he is, that's a legitimate three.
Yeah, I mean it's a little different than Helixson, O'Sullivan,
just barely different, man.
Jared Eichhoff.
It's not gonna get carried away. It's basically the same thing.
It's just crazy that he's here. It's crazy that the Phillies were
feels able, like we've been waiting forever.
The Phillies actually drafted him, which was crazy. Yeah. You know, I'm not
shocking.
Yeah,
it's so anti. Like now that Barber's here, it's a different story. But pre-Brian Barber, Spencer Howard is like a diamond in the rough in terms of Phillies drafts.
Yeah. Now I will say, service time is whatever. I don't think he's ready. And why I say that is because it was even the third inning of last night or the fourth inning. Like you could see his location started to get off a little bit, and it looked like he was starting to get tired. Like I don't think he's ready. I don't think he's ramped up enough to be ready to go. I almost think he needs another extra week or two to get up to being ready to pitch six or seven innings. Like you kind of saw the stuff start to fall off a little bit in the end of the third inning. And I know service time is whatever. They'll probably keep him down anyway. But I actually don't think he's ready to start the season yet. I know last night was disgusting, but I don't know if he's ready just yet. And it's actual baseball reasons, not service time reasons.
Well, it's a good segue here because we mentioned it before, but Bryce Harper certainly thinks he's ready. Yeah. Apparently on a Twitch, Bryce Harper yet again spouting off. Bryce said, if Spencer Howard isn't starting in our rotation by game six in New York against the Yankees, there's a problem. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
GM Bryce.
Yeah. I mean,
calling the shots.
Obviously, it's a good thing that Bryce wants to win as much as he does.
Yes, I appreciate it.
You know, I mean, we could start with signing the best catcher in baseball, but whatever.
Yep.
I just think it's dumb. Like it's 1 week. I understand it's a sprint to the finish line, but if it is 7 days, which it seems like it is 7 days,
it's like, one start. We're talking about one start here. Bryce, like again, Jack and I, you know, like we want them to win as much as anyone alive. Like we're diseased. Like we understand that every game matters in this short season. If all you have to do is keep them down 7 days to get a year of service time, like it would be malpractice to not keep him down for 7 days. Like that's just asinine to not
malpractice. Absolutely.
Organizational malpractice. It would be.
Yeah.
And so, they won't do it. They're not going to do it. No. They will get the year reserves.
Yeah. So sorry, Bryce.
He's just putting the team in a bad spot. Like he is just yet again, just like going against what the team is going to do in that situation in that moment and speaking out. And look, again, I'm with you. I appreciate cheerleader Bryce. I appreciate how bad this guy wants to win, how he's willing to say, like, we need this guy, we need that. I appreciate it, but in certain specific situations, he is just making it harder on his team.
Yeah. So listen, again, love it. I like it.
Love it.
I like,
yeah, my heart loves it.
But, like, we got to be a little bit smarter here. You know, like, I'm sure the Phillies are waking up to this, like, dude, are you kidding me? Bryce, just calm down. You know, Spencer will be up week two. And if you watched him last night, I don't know if he's 100% ready yet. I think he needs another week of ramping up to do.
Well, and it goes back to what you were talking about before, though. Wouldn't it be nice if you think that Howard is right now ready to give you three dominant innings And then you can bring Velasquez, Pivetta, whoever in to pitch the next four or something. Like, that's an interesting option to have in a unique season like this, that type of thing. So, you know, I think they can play around with it too.
Yeah.
All right. Any other thoughts from the intraquad stuff? And I do not want to hear the names Andrew freaking Knapp out of your mouth. Keep to yourself. What else is on your mind?
Swing looks good. Swing looks fluid.
I can't take it. It's funny too, because in this weird year, this unique year, like, it's, you know, backup catcher is going to matter. It's going to be important. And it's just like, oh,
yeah.
Man.
I mean, I will say, I definitely like him more than Devi Gurion.
I do too. Let's be real. Like, he looks like a major league player, and Devi Gurion does not.
Yeah.
And Devi Gurion, and we're not like, the dude is not a good catcher. No. Like, he's just not a good defensive catcher. No, that Knapp's amazing defensively, but at least Knapp, like, the Phillies believe he can handle a staff, which is the most important thing. Listen, I don't know if Devi Gurion.
Knock Knapp all you want. Guy works a good at bat and is a good clubhouse guy.
He's a great clubhouse guy. People love him, you know? So
yeah. And listen,
this is the nicest I want to get about Andrew.
From what I've seen, I like Logan O'Hop a lot, but that's just me.
That's a ways away.
A couple other just quick notes from what I saw. Kingery looks great. I mean, Kingery's squaring up the baseball. Obviously,
which is great considering. Obviously, yeah. I mean, he of all the guys, the biggest, like at least the most open about COVID and how sick he got and all that, and to just see him back and really seeming like he didn't miss much. That play last night, that play at second base, dude. That play.
Yeah, he's.
When was the last time a Philadelphia Phillies second baseman made that play? Like Chase, you know.
I don't even know if Chase can make that play.
I don't even know. I agree with you. That was like a super athletic play, man.
That's like a Manny Trio. Athletic.
I agree with you. R.I.P. That was a super athletic play.
R.I.P. Tony Taylor, like maybe his play.
Yeah, no, great point. Yeah, R.I.P. Tony Taylor, great Philly.
Yeah, Kingery, honestly, like first time really being able to watch him play second base.
Yep. Yeah.
Like he's special. Like you can just tell he's a special defensive player at second base.
I mean, again, that play was elite second base play. Like that was elite.
Yeah, and I'm like, he made some throw last night on a double play, and I was like, oh, they're not getting this. And it was just a dime, right, like right to Reese. I was like,
makes sense. Look, he could play third and short. He's got an arm to play short. Like at second, he has an elite second baseman arm.
Yeah,
well above average.
Listen, I think he's gonna lead the team in WAR this year. I can't wait for Kingery.
I'm really excited.
Other things I saw, man. I hope it's just inner squads, but I think Reese looks terrible. And he's starting to go back to his swing from last year.
The stance is going back to exactly what it was before.
And
it is not. I've not been impressed. Weak contact.
He's still
again.
He's still hooking balls. You know, I don't like
still pulling them.
He squared up Damon Jones last night, but still didn't. It kind of died. I'm worried about Reese. I really am. I hope it's just inner squads, but I mean, I can't. What my eyes are telling me, it's like
there's just no hard contact.
Yeah.
Like all I want to see right now is hit the ball hard wherever you hit it. Like even if you're still pulling the ball, like I want to see some hard contact. And it feels like every time, even that like that fly ball that was like a little short of the warning track or whatever. Like even off the bat and on TV, sometimes you can get fooled by those. Even off the bat, you're like, oh, that's not enough. You know what I mean? It doesn't feel like he's striking the ball hard.
Nope. And the other thing, like. I'm happy he's hitting singles. I'm happy he's getting hits. But can Alec Bohm freaking launch one? Like
I know.
Can we just hit a tank shot? You know, Jared Kelenic has
another double over the shortstop or single over the shortstop's head. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
Thanks, Alec.
Cool. I mean, I'm happy you're getting hits. You clearly can square up a baseball and make good contact. But, like, let's launch a ball. You know, we don't always have to be thinking right center field gap. You know, let's get the ball in the air.
With you,
Yandy Diaz, you know, let's hit some balls.
Yandy.
Let's hit some balls out of the ballpark. And then final thing, listen, I'm all in on Ramon Rosso being like the setup guy for this team. The guy's nasty. And
well, they need I know we've joked about it, and like I'm not expecting anyone to come up and be as good as Sir Anthony was in 18 or whatever, but like that idea of the way this bullpen is comprised, they are going to need one of these guys, whether it's Rosso, whether it's Damon Jones, whether it's McClain, whether it's whoever, like, and I think Rosso makes a lot of sense. One of these guys is going to have to come up and be someone they can trust in the sixth or eighth innings. Like, they're going to need one of these guys to be someone like that.
Yeah, and I think Girardi actually said it the other day. I like that he's reading my Twitter timeline. But They might have more talented lefties than righties, which like is so weird.
I don't think there's any question, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like Liriano, Morgan, Alvarez,
Damon Jones, Garrett Clevenger,
yes,
Jojo Romero.
The, like if we're talking about
Ranger Suarez.
The five relievers we trust most on this team, and you know, very loose definition of trust, but it's Hector Neris and Tommy Hunter are the only righties. Then it's Liriano, Morgan, Alvarez in the next three.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, name another bullpen that has better lefties than righties. Like doesn't make any sense. So
no.
Ramon Rosso, I think, is gonna be the best right-handed reliever on this team, not named Neris. And I hope he's on the team from opening day because I feel like they're kind of work him in whatnot and. They're not going to put him in that role ASAP, which is whatever, but I think he could do the role as soon as possible. Like, he seems confident. Stuff's legitimately good. I'm excited to see what Ramon Rosso can do. We are 1 week from Philly's opening day.
I should have opened with that. That's my bad. Literally 1 week from today, it's going to be 10:48, which is what time it is now, what Jack and I are recording right now. 10:48 in the morning, 1 week from today, and you and I are going to be like texting each other nonstop about tonight the Phillies play baseball.
It's going to be on Charlie Manuel Appreciation Day here on WIP.
Oh, so I'm so ready. I'm all the anger, all the frustration, it's all gone for me. Like, it's not forgotten. It's just all gone right now. It's just pure excitement. That's where I'm at.
And I guess one – like the pitchers that matter. I mean, Wheeler looked disgusting, which is great. And Arrieta actually looked pretty good. I'm not going to be, you know, until I see it, but it seems like the stuff's down. He took Alec Bohm to school. Like, he threw a cutter to the outside corner that Bohm was, like, into the third base dugout with, which was, like, a big welcome to the show kind of moment.
Well, it'll be fun to see, too, you know, this weekend, I don't know if the Washington one's going to happen, but the Yankees, Orioles, we'll get to see some, you know, different play. Philly's actually pitching to opposing teams, which will be pretty neat.
I can't wait.
And,
I need to see Clark Schmidt for myself. I hope the Yankees pitch Clark Schmidt.
Clark Schmidt. It's a good name.
Yeah.
Clark Schmidt will work. That'll play that name. Yeah, man. We're there. It's exciting. We'll obviously we'll have a pod next week, but then we will definitely make time to record probably Friday night after the game or Saturday morning or whatever. You will hear from us after.
Maybe
the
every
game.
Day. Maybe every day.
Yeah. Once the Phillies are playing baseball, we'll be here
honestly,
as usual. So
my sleep schedule is already messed up. I woke up at like 6 the other day because I was so giddy, and I just rewatched the inner squad. Like I can't
tell you how unbelievably happy I have been to just see Phillies players doing things on my TV screen every night. Like it's like made me a happier person. It has changed my outlook on the world, Jack.
Oh, one more week.
Oh, let's go. You got any final thoughts, Jack?
I do not. Let's get to opening day.
One last time, thank you, Scott Fransky, for giving us so much time. That was really awesome. And we'll be back next week talking about the Phillies coming our way in mere days. And I can't wait. He's Fritz himself. We'll see you later.